Because our dear friend Matt is anal. And more was
I was going to say, Jesus, Tim.
Because he's gay. Ho, ho.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, Matt Savickle returns to talk to us about conventions. The wrath of cons! Get it?
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God, and once again, I am your host, Molly Glover, joined by my co-host and husband, Nick Glover.
Hi!
And our co-host, Tim Wick.
I'm not her husband.
He's not my husband.
Thank God.
No. He's Nick's husband, though.
As it were.
Yes.
Well, maybe someday. maybe if the Supreme Court figures it out.
And we are joined once again by a friend of the show, Matt Savickle. Hello, Matt.
Hey, everyone.
Yes, hey. And we are here because Matt is going to talk about something. The other thing he's an expert on, which is conventions.
Because he wasn't an expert on Doctor
That's
Who.
That's correct.
Like 5 weeks ago. I mean, this is pretty unusual to have
it is unusual.
To be fair, I'm an armchair expert because I'm not currently volunteering for any convention. So,
However, he did bring a 3-page, like 8-point font list of all the conventions he's been to in his life, and it's a lot of conventions. So I declare the more than an armchair expert. Thou art the expert entire. I don't know where it's going.
Bling.
Yes. But yes, conventions are near and dear to all geeks' hearts. And if you haven't been to a convention, you probably always have wanted to. You should take the plunge and do it because it's fun, right, Matt?
It's wonderful. It's a great place to meet other people like you. It's a way to get off the internet and socialize and, you know, have fun discussions. People go for different reasons. Some people go for the parties. Some people go for the cosplay. Mm-hmm. Some people, for me, it's mainly like panels and discussions and just, you know, talking in public forums, I guess.
Rubbing elbows with the celebrities.
Or that.
I feel like the older I get, the more interested I am in like the panels part of and like discussion part of it. Like it's prior to that, it's always been partying. Mostly, kind of like,
yeah,
for convergence at least.
I will say that since we quit smoking cigarettes, it has been much more fun to be in panels and doing that. Because before it was like, oh, an hour. I guess I can go an hour without a cigarette if it's really important. Because at convergence, we would smoke a lot of cigarettes. You just smoke all the time if you're a smoker.
There's such an active social smoking area.
It's been like 4 years since I quit, and that's been nice to come. For those, but so here I'm gonna ask you the question that everyone always asks me when I say I go to conventions is, do you like dress up when you go to these conventions?
I have before, not every year. Convergence is probably where I do most of the dress up, I guess. And although there was a time I showed up at a con meeting in my Star Trek uniform just for fun. It was an election, and I felt it was an important event. So.
To be official in some way.
So time to rock out the DS9 costume.
What's ConCom? You should try to...
So conventions, science fiction conventions, I guess, got their start in the late 1930s. I think there's some discrepancies around which fan group in New Jersey or New York actually started the first one.
We are not historians. We got to make that really clear.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's on Wikipedia or something. But...
They're not historians either.
So the conventions have, you know, sprung up around just general science fiction topics or specific to shows or to particular fandoms. And just, you know, a thing that people go to every year and... Or annually, somewhere more often. Mm-hmm. I forget what the original question was.
And the con-com is
these conventions happen, and of course, they don't happen by themselves. You need people to staff them and volunteer, and then so you have a convention committee, which is what con-com is short for.
Sure. Yeah. And you were on the con-com for Convergence, as is Tim Wick now, What was your role in the... Convergence is the sci-fi convention we talk about a lot. We did our first show there. If you don't know what it is, you should go look it up. I'm not going to keep explaining it.
I was for 2 years.
And yes, yeah. Nick also was. I was not. So Tell us about your experiences on ConCon.
So I started volunteering with Convergence at the very first Convergence, which was in 99, doing panels and stuff. Did that for a couple of years, and then joined as a programming subhead, so responsible for, you know, helping gather ideas to generate programming and panels and get people to sit them and schedule them. So I did that for 4 years or so, and then I became programming head in 2008, which corresponded with the 10-year anniversary. And it was supposed to be me and another guy doing it, and the other guy had other commitments and stuff, so it was ended up being me, and I think I expended like 5 years worth of single year, because so the first year that Convergence went from 3 days to 4 days,
and
then they invited back all their previous guests, so it was dealing with about 25 guests of honor. And
was it the 10-year anniversary one?
Yeah, that they did the 10-year anniversary.
And then I did.
We went nuts.
Two more years, and I was actually reporting to Tim because he was the events head and was one of the founders of Convergence.
That is true.
Yeah.
Both of those things are true.
That was the last year that Michael Sheard was there, right?
No, Michael Sheard was not there in year 10. He had already died. He was the... I'd have to go look at the schedule to figure that out.
And Tim, so I know that, you know, Matt has... we were talking before, and Matt was saying that, like, some programming that you allowed through, maybe you were a little embarrassed by. Yeah.
So this is interesting. So... You know, I'm a relatively recent atheist, probably in the last two or three years. Mm-hmm. Most of my 20s I was a deist, but I also wasn't skeptical. So, you know, anything that sounded interesting, like ancient aliens or
ghosts,
anything like that, really.
Bigfoot hunters.
I would get into it for a while and then lose interest and go to other things.
Mm-hmm.
But I brought that mentality when I was programming for Convergence, and the way Convergence was set up at the time was that it was very much a campus model, so you'd have different rooms dedicated to different subjects. Mm-hmm. So there was a science and technology room, and things like the local robotics society would put on panels, local astronomers would do things, but then I would get approached by hypnotists, by parapsychologists, by ghost hunters.
Oh, so scientists.
By UFO hunters. And I was thinking, great, this is somewhat science fiction. Who knows if it's real or not? We have to be fair. So I was bringing that mentality to the program, and looking back on it, I just want to formally apologize for the years 2008 through 2010 and the addition of so much non-science in the
pseudoscience.
Well, see, you know, here's the thing. I was co-programming head with Matt after I stopped being on the board of directors. And, you know, after Matt left, I was in charge of one of the programming heads. And I actually... Convergence is not a skeptical convention. Convergence is a science fiction convention. And to me, I actually felt bad that we have a really good, strong skeptics track put together by Skeptics and the Free Thought blog people, a lot of whom are local, a lot of whom are not. And they do great panels, and I love them. And I always feel like we're not representing the people at the convention that are not skeptics. And while I think ghost hunters are nuts and stupid, I don't think that it's my place as the head of programming to decide that it's not okay for them to talk at our convention.
You're not going
to
censor other people's...
It's like, why should I decide that we shouldn't have a Firefly panel just because I'm not into Firefly?
Have you ever thought about having a paranormal track? Or a crypto, like a cryptozoology, paranormal, like, I mean, because there's obviously a lot of people interested in it, and it wouldn't be being presented as fact if it wasn't under the science and technology kind of a thing, if it was, you know, the maybe just even a supernatural track where it's talking about that kind of stuff.
Well, we're kind of moving away from the track model and really just focusing on putting panels in rooms where they seem to fit, and then, you know, tagging them. So, I mean, we would tag panels that are paranormal as paranormal panels. I think the problem is we don't have a lot of people coming to the convention that want to have that kind of... I mean, I'll give you an example. Last year, the Skeptics track, they wanted to do a panel on global climate change. They wanted to do a couple of panels on global climate change. And so somebody saw this on our list of panel suggestions and was like, hey, why don't you have a panel for climate change deniers?
Oh, boy.
And I was like, my response was, well, that's a good point. I will create that panel, and I will put it out there, and if we get enough people to sign up to sit it, then we will hold it.
Sure.
And we didn't.
Well, of course not. Yeah.
We didn't get anybody to sign up for it. Not even the room who wanted the panel to exist.
Sure.
It's like the dude who wanted the panel to exist didn't even want to sit on the panel to talk about it.
Because he doesn't want to sit up there and have an audience full of us telling him how wrong he is.
Right.
Well, at least not without some scientists there to share his spotlight. So it's the same thing kind of with the paranormal thing in that I want to have... The problem with... And I'll tell you what. The problem with the paranormal people is they're all the biggest fucking flakes ever. I can say this because I know they're not listening. Because the thing is...
They're phasing in and out of this plane.
They are. They are. So you try and schedule shit with these people and they don't answer you and you send them emails and you say, you know what? If you don't sign up for a panel this week... I'm not going to be able to schedule you at the convention. They're like, oh my God, yeah, I want to have a panel. I'll tell you more information later. Then like 3 weeks go by, you're like, would you mind telling me what panel you want to have? I got one guy, the dude who was on the Ancient Alien debate panel last year.
Yeah.
And he's a friend, and I don't think he listens to this podcast, but if he does, Scotty, seriously, man, you gotta get it to fucking together, man.
Yeah, because deadlines are deadlines for everyone, man.
Yeah, because he comes in. Yeah, and literally, the last 2 years, he's like, I've got this big PowerPoint presentation that I do about the Nephilim and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, whatever. Sure, that sounds great. We'll schedule you in the AV room. He shows up, and what's the first thing he asked me 2 years in a row? Hey, man, I don't have a computer. Do you have some way to run this?
Oh, my God.
And it's just like, what the fuck? How is it that you didn't understand? How did you not understand the part where I sent you the email that said... We have a projector,
and we
have cables to connect you to the projector.
Well, it's Tim, when he meant PowerPoint presentation, he meant forcefully gesturing with his finger.
Anyway, so the big problem, honestly, the big problem is these guys are flakes, and you just can't get them to answer you to sign up for panels. It's just infuriating.
I do agree with the whole, you know, especially Convergence. I mean, not every convention is the same, and clearly, I mean, there are big differences, and I would like to talk to you about some of those that you've been to, but with Convergence, I agree with you that we kind of make it like a place for everybody, so programming needs to at least be open to everybody, but it shouldn't be like we're gonna have a panel no matter what, even if it's one dude sitting by himself in a room talking to himself.
It seems like quasi-democratic. If there's enough interest, the panel will have the support to happen.
Yeah, if the paranormal people could get their shit together and put together a track of 5-10 panels like the skeptics do, sweet, we'd schedule them.
So
absolutely.
Since most of our listeners are familiar with Convergence, what panel or what convention have you been to that you think is the least like Convergence or differs the most?
Well, I would say sci-fi wise, there are lots of different conventions locally. Like Diversicon is very small; it's less than 100 people, but just really fun, open discussions. OmegaCon is a great convention. It's a Relaxicon. You guys did the podcast from there.
Yeah,
that is fun.
It's a good time.
But really, I think. So I recently have started going to like atheist conventions or conferences. I went to the Madison Freethought Festival last year, and this year it was just a couple weeks ago. And then went to the regional atheist conference here last August that David Silverman, the president of American Atheist, was at.
Oh, fun!
And Jessica Ahlquist was there. She was the Rhode Island teenager who.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
And it was really cool just to see all these speakers like Teresa McBain, Greta Christina, Matt Dillahunty, P.Z. Myers, you know, come in and talk. There, it's much more structured, where it's a one big open room where it's one thing after another, kind of like a big programming space. And then typically they'll break for dinner, and then maybe I'll go out to a bar or something. Mm-hmm. It's not like Convergence or other larger sci-fi.
It's more like a business convention almost.
Yeah, I would definitely say mentality-wise. P.Z. Myers actually wrote an interesting article or a blog post after Convergence last year where he was talking about how he would rather have how to use Convergence and other conventions almost as a way to get skeptical ideas out there.
Oh, sure. Almost like a way to like recruit atheists in a way, or like kind of get them, not recruit, that sounds
exposure.
Like a bad word.
No.
Exposure.
Maybe like
the ideas.
Have them just be, because like I know you were saying that like when we talked to you last episode that you were on, about one of the things that helped you come to the fore and come to grips with the fact that you were an atheist was being exposed to those skeptical thoughts and thought patterns. Yeah. Do you think that that's something that would be good to do?
It's a great way to get it's a great way to propagate the idea mm-hmm. out there of critical thinking and rationality. And for me, it was so much getting introduced, because growing up Catholic, you know, I was taught, you know, Thomas the Skeptic, the Doubter, you know, mm-hmm. how that's right. Like any sort of doubt is kind of, you know, sinful. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you kind of wall that off in your brain almost, and it's just this difficult process to deconstruct that and to build it all back up. But, you know, just learning about skepticism and that it's a movement and that it's a way of thinking, and it, you know, maybe I didn't the first couple of years go to their panels, but, you know, when Skeptic's Guide to the Universe podcast took off, you know, it's like starting to listen to a couple episodes of that or check out their websites mm-hmm. and get more information. So it's a to me, it's more of a consciousness raising sort of
outreach activity, not yeah. recruiting. Yeah. It's being present, being seen, not hiding it, I think is important. I mean,
it's the Horton hears a who thing. It's shouting, we are here, we are here, we are here, until somebody hears you mm-hmm. and says, oh, sweet, you're exactly what I was looking for the whole time.
Right.
It the hardest thing as an atheist is finding a community, because you feel like an outsider the moment you make that decision, because our entire society is set up to make you feel like you are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I
don't even think it's a decision. I mean, yeah. like I feel yeah. like you either, you know, are a believer or you're not, and things can sway you and things can open your eyes or whatever, you can have revelations, but like I don't think I have any choice but to be an atheist at this point, because
sure, but you could live your whole life in the closet, so to speak.
Well, sure, okay, yeah, yeah, like no, there's
and there,
that.
And
yeah.
there are plenty of people who are. I mean, the Clergy Project. I mentioned it before, but I mean, the Clergy Project is this charity that's all about people who are clergy who mm-hmm. realize they don't believe in God anymore, mm-hmm. and helping them get out of that, because most of them are too afraid to leave.
Yeah,
that's the only life they know, so they sit there preaching to people about God when they don't mm-hmm. actually believe it anymore. So I think it is important. I think what having these sorts of things at, you know, a skeptic convention is really, reading about what's being talked about at skeptic conventions, in many ways to me it's almost like a training convention. It's saying, or a skeptic or an atheist convention, it's saying, hey, we all agree that there is no God, mm-hmm. and now what does that mean
mm-hmm.
beyond yeah. Yeah. just that,
well,
that
just, yeah.
exchange of ideas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a business convention where it's like, we all agree we should sell siding, so let's talk about how
so
to do that.
So let's talk about how to sell siding.
That's part of it. It's the atheist conferences I've been to, the panels are a little bit, they try to do a little bit of variety, where you'll have science panels like by PZ or others that'll talk about like how the human genome or the human genetic, I don't know the exact terms, but humans, you know, can't process vitamin C, and that's why there's scurvy. Mm. But we have the genetic chain all the way to process it. Just like, you know, cats don't have to mm-hmm. have a citrus thing. They mm-hmm. are able to pull it naturally from the food. It exists in us, and in some of our primate relatives, it's complete. But for us, it's this little, the last link
switched
is just switched off, and we can't do it. Or, you know, how eyes develop, or the nerve in a giraffe, the blood vessel.
Yeah,
just things that point to things not being intelligently designed.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that might be a panel, or another panel might be on the founding of the country, and, you know, here's how In God We Trust was really added to the money, you know, in 1863 and in 1954 during times of crisis. So you learn about all this stuff that, you know, you might not otherwise have been exposed to, maybe, you know, if you went to a conservative high school or mm-hmm. college. So.
Infotainment.
Yeah.
And we're actually, you know, I should bring up, there's a skeptical conference coming up this very week.
Yeah.
On Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
We'll be there Friday and Sunday.
And we'll be there Friday and Sunday, Skeptech at the, we'll have a link, but it's at the University of Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to do some live podcasts, including.
It's free.
Yeah, it's totally free. Anybody know? That's actually one of the things that's I've noticed. Pretty much all skeptical conferences that I've seen seemed
with the exception of free
or suggested donation.
Yeah. With the exception of like the amazing meeting, yeah. But most of the smaller ones are free.
I'm excited to go. I'm excited to try because I've never been to anything like that before. All my conventions have been, you know, like more recreational type convergence, mm-hmm. OmegaCon, whatever, MarsCon this year.
Well, and the thing about it too that I like is that they're all getting together and it's, you know, we've been comparing it to a business convention, but it's not just talking about, not just getting together and being like, oh yeah, I don't believe in God. Yeah, me neither. Oh, aren't we great? But there actually have been some positive gains that have come out of these. Like when Skeptics started with the no harassment policies at Convergence and then other conventions, it spread to like Dragon Con, the whole costumes aren't consent, which has become almost like a national movement, really.
I do want to point out that was not the Skeptics that came up with the costumes aren't consent. It was the Convergence Ops Department that came up with that.
It was Ops. It was Gypsy
In reaction.
Yes.
It was actually, it wasn't just created by women either. It was a friend of ours who's male and a friend of ours who's female. And they were just thinking, they were just spitballing while they were drunk one night talking about how it shouldn't matter. You know, and they came up with this. But the Skeptics are the ones, I think, that really pushed it at other conventions, you know, and really, became a...
Since then, we've seen a lot more about it, like Rob Callahan's article about convention etiquette for sci-fi conventions. Mm-hmm. He talks about costumes and consent a little bit in that, too. I think that it's been a remarkable success because, bigger conventions are doing it and other people are talking about it and, I don't know, it's obviously a good thing.
What sorts of things... I mean, assuming you've been to conventions beyond sci-fi conventions, like gaming conventions and...
I have not been to a gaming convention.
Really?
I haven't been to video gaming, but you have.
I have.
From the working in the floor perspective,
Gen Con specifically is the one that I've gone to that's the biggest, and the New York Toy Fair isn't really it's just more of a show. Gen Con, it's so different because it's basically a big retail. I mean, it's like a huge mall of game stores. And then, people getting drunk in hotels and playing in restaurants around.
Is it kind of like Fall Con and Spring Con that we have here?
The comic convention?
Yeah.
The large dealers?
Yes. It's basically the whole convention center is turned into a dealer's room. And then there's other rooms for things like when they build the towers of magic cards, they have a whole... thing for that.
Is there organized gaming? I mean, I assume there's Magic the Gathering tournaments and
upstairs.
Stuff.
I never get to see it, but upstairs there's tournaments for that. Like, we run tournaments for Dust Tactics, all of our LCGs, X-Wing, with prizes and, the whole shebang. And, like, our demo team people are usually up there I work, 9 to 7, and they're usually up there from 9 until sometimes midnight, depending on how long the things go. But I feel like it's different from us. Like the sci-fi convention, everyone shares pretty big fandoms, you know.
Yep.
And even if you don't like Doctor Who or you don't like Firefly, you've heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's lots of groups under one tent. Mm-hmm. I think is what it is. I don't want to downplay the one portion of the atheist conferences though, in that they're a little bit businessy, but there is something that you feel when you walk into a room and you realize that there are 300 or 400 other people that think just like you do. And it's really, really powerful to experience that and to realize, like, oh, we're all on the same page. We all have that in common, at least, and now we can move on to and, discuss other things.
Yeah.
And that feeling is just really incredible, so.
That's interesting, because, I get that at Convergence. That's one of the things, is, like, even,
people.
My people. There's the new generation of youngsters, and these are the venerated, And I get that at Gen Con, too, because it's, like, these are all people who are, like, crazy for games. Like, they live and breathe it the way we do. And it's interesting that it's all... I think that's probably the closest we're going to get to church, in a way. That must be what it's like to be religious and to have a church that you like. When you get there and you're like, oh, all of these people believe the same weird thing I do, and so therefore
the same
we can...
worldview,
And that, I'm really... I'm excited to go to atheist church then this weekend. that's going to be fun.
We'll see y'all at atheist church at the University of Minnesota.
That's one of my favorite things at Convergence is seeing... like you said, the next generation of nerds, Like, I love
16-year-olds canoodling in a corner.
I was just about to say that. Like, that's the best part. Like, last year there was like a 17-year-old couple, like, against a wall, just like extreme hardcore makeout.
The kind of making out you do when all you're doing is kissing and maybe a little over the clothes because you haven't progressed past that, so you just kiss with all of your body. Like
it was, and Molly and I walked by and it's like, ha, like, good job, young nerds, like, get some.
Well, I saw a couple of like teenage, maybe they, and again, they may be 21. Everyone under 30 looks like a teenager to me these days.
Sure.
But like a couple of dudes holding hands and like linking arms and hugging and stuff, and it's gay, trans, poly, bi, friendly, like, it's so nice to see.
The science fiction community is remarkably accepting. You know, we talked about how the science fiction, there's a crossover. I think Nick and I talked about it on the TV show. We were on TV.
I was dying.
You were gone. So, but on that show, and I've talked about it too, that I think, you know, there are a lot more atheists within the science fiction community, but it's much easier to be open about it,
mm-hmm.
because people are kind of accepting of all sorts of weird shit. I mean, if mm-hmm. you're going to go to a convention and you're going to be a 200 some odd doughy guy who's going to dress up in a Star Trek uniform
or a Sailor Moon costume.
Yeah, or a Sailor Moon.
Or Adventure Time.
Right? High five.
All three of us.
If you're going to show up at a convention and do that, then it strips away everything.
Yeah.
And you don't have to feel like there's something that I can do that's wrong.
That's why I thought Misfits was the perfect name for our local, like, geek. Because I just thought it was such a good name, and
Do you feel like being a part of the sci-fi community, especially the convention community, was something that helped you be more confident in being gay and atheist and, like, I mean, in those fringe, you know?
Definitely. It gives you a sense of confidence. It can be jarring, I think, to, you know, do the convention circuit and go to 6 or 7 conventions a year and then, you know, flip back to real life and then have to, you know, depending on what type of job you have, of course, too. But having that freedom, at least in the communities and in those hotels, you know, minus the BO smell, I guess. But it's a wonderful experience, and you do carry that through with you, you know, as you go between events.
We have a term for that when you come back from, like, Convergence, especially, I think is where it originated. Mm-hmm. But when you kind of have, like, post con depression, it's con we.
Coming to terms with the banality of normal life is con-wee. Like,
con-wee.
I'm not even wearing 4-inch heels today. I guess I just won't wear a costume because it's just regular life.
I guess I'll wear this boring plain t-shirt.
Yeah,
I've heard of another term too that programmers use, and was coined by the program director for Anime Detour. But whenever she's dealing with panelists that are, you know, crazy, not getting their stuff in late, mm-hmm. and stuff, it's con-far.
Yes. Oh my god.
Man, I think confar, like, if someone asked me to define confar, my definition would be like nerds that only get laid at Convergence or like at the one con they go to. Like, that's confar. Like, that's mating season for nerds.
I love it.
Yeah.
All right. So, Matt, you are a returning guest, and as such, you have been bestowed upon with the honor of giving us 5 questions.
Oh boy.
And we don't know what they are. Yep. And I'm super excited.
But we know that he did a lot of research. He went and found out all the questions that had been asked of us already to make sure that he wouldn't repeat any of them.
This kid is prepared.
What can I say? All right, so question number 1. Oh, should we talk about the book thing, too?
Oh, yes.
We'll talk about that at the end.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so question number 1. Of what you've seen, your favorite and or least favorite doctor from Doctor Who and why?
So one or the other?
Or both, if you can do it quickly.
Yes.
My favorite's Tom Baker, because there's like a shirt that's like, you never forget your first doctor. Tom Baker's my first doctor. He had the scarf, he had the robot dog, he was a super tall guy with crazy hair. Like, everything about Tom Baker is why I started watching Doctor Who. And everything else is like, what happened after that? So Tom Baker.
I'm only like new generation, so I've seen Eccleston and Tennant and Smith, and I have a, I would you know, before Smith got into my heart, I would have said Tenet like that. And I still would say he's my favorite, but I don't think I have a least favorite, honestly. Like, I have waxed poetic for hours about the differences between them and why I like the progression of the character in these specific three Doctor incarnations.
Your least favorite isn't...
No, because I've come to understand that Eccleston is a angry warlike, like, coming from a place of... anyway.
The genocider, yeah.
You know, I came to Doctor Who through Tom Baker on PBS Channel 2 in the Twin Cities in the 1980s. And I really do like Tom Baker. Usually when I'm pressed, my answer is that my favorite Doctor is the Doctor's... is the Pertwee, Baker, Davidson trilogy.
Ah.
Oh.
Because I like the progression of those three Doctors
an
awful lot, and it's hard for me to pick between them.
That's how I feel, yeah.
I think they all really brought a great character to the Doctor, and they all really moved what Doctor Who was.
Like, those three were, like... the three facets of a generation almost.
Yeah. I feel that way about this one, for sure.
To me, they're the Doctor Who sweet spot. And I mean, I like the other Doctors who have played, and I certainly like the three men who have played the Doctor in the modern era as well, but those three were like the Doctor Who sweet spot for me. And when I was growing up with Doctor Who, they were the ones that I loved.
Smith's my runner-up, even though he looks like Frankenberry.
he's growing on me.
All right, question number two. Nice. What area or development of scientific study most intrigues you and why?
Oh.
Forensics. Specifically, like forensic pathology. That's what I wanted to go into when I was a kid. Like second grade, when they say, what do you want to be when you grow up? Mine was always a forensic pathologist and pictures of me cutting up bodies. But I found out that that in order to get through my high school with the classes I would need to go to college, I had to take anatomy, and we had to dissect a cat, and I was like, no way, like, I'm out, I'm not going to dissect a cat, like, I'll dissect a human corpse. And they're like, well, we don't have a human corpse. I'm like, well, too bad, if you could have one, I'd be down, like, I have no problem dissecting things, just not a cat. Like, couldn't do a cat, couldn't do a dog. They didn't give consent. The human being, here's my thing, I never have a problem when humans die in movies or whatever, because they are vocal, verbal, and have language, and you can communicate to them what's happening. They know when they're dying. They
understand what death is.
They know what's going on. Cats and dogs, all I know is, you know, they don't know, and they're probably astray, and it's a whole,
I get it. Yeah. It's an interesting line that you couldn't cross.
Yeah.
What do you got? You got?
Oh, yeah, I got some. Right. Transhumanism. Mm-hmm. I think, at this point, like, we're almost to the point, more so than usual, where we can, like, take evolution into our own hands, and, like, the future people, we can build them for colonization or living in space. We can make ourselves more resistant to radiation. We can make ourselves live longer. We can cure all sorts of fucking diseases. We can, and whether it's by genetics, which seems like, you know, more and more likely, or... straight up, like, Google Glass type, you know, bionic eye replacements, whatever it is, like, transhumanism is always the science stuff that's way the most interesting to me, because I just think, like, upgrading ourselves is the coolest thing. Like, who doesn't want to be more than human?
You will be upgraded.
I was going to say, are you Cybermen or Borg?
Borg. I'll lean towards Borg on that one, because there's, I don't know, there's Borg who have, like, kept their uniqueness, like the Borg Queen or like Seven of Nine, where they get those perks of being more than human, but they don't, like, lose themselves in the masses.
This is a hard one for me. There are a lot of them that I would pick, but today I will go with cosmetology. The study and exploration of space, because I would totally be a fucking
cosmetology, astronaut. Not cosmetology.
No, yeah.
I was like, what?
I would love to go into space. That would be the coolest fucking thing ever. So I would have to say, and just, there's so much crazy shit that we don't know anything about, and the excitement of discovering how we're discovering planets these days.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's my pick.
I'm not gonna answer these. I'll answer them on the website. But this one, I will say that mine would be terraforming.
Yeah.
I would say. I think there's maybe longer-term possibility with looking at Venus, because the atmosphere is already there,
right?
As opposed to Mars,
where there is no atmosphere. Yeah, yeah. Have you read Red Mars?
I am about halfway through it, and I I want to get back to it.
I set it down about halfway through, and I picked it back up, and now I'm about 50 pages from the end of the first book. And
you bring up Red Mars so often on this podcast, I should make it a tag.
That's because I've been reading it for like a year.
If I ever get divorced and he gets remarried, it's going to be because he left me for Red Mars.
But it's not even like I'm that obsessed with the book. It's just
it just comes up.
I just never am done reading it because
All right,
I get distracted.
Confessional time, podcasters.
Ooh.
What is your biggest geeky guilty shame? The one thing you really want to see or read or play that you just haven't gotten around to, and might even have in passing conversation implied that you had experienced it, just so you weren't singled out.
Holy shit!
That's a really good question.
I thought about these.
Oh my goodness. And then I don't have a quick
this is that's a tricky one.
When you're thinking about it, I can throw out my answer. Harry Potter. I have not read books 5, 6, or 7, or seen movies 5, 6, or 7.
Oh wow! Are you saving them to do right or
someday?
Okay. Yeah. Oh wow! You're just not that enthusiastic about it.
If I'm understanding the question, it can be something that we're kind of like embarrassed to maybe join, but we really want to.
Or is it something that you feel like as part of geek culture you should have experienced?
Oh, okay.
That we haven't. That you haven't. That's kind of like your big guilty shame.
I can think of one for you easier than I can think of for me.
I feel guilty that I am such a Doctor Who fan, but I'm not familiar. I literally haven't seen any old Doctor Who at all. Like, at all. And so when I talk about liking Doctor Who, and people are like, remember when blah, 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 and they'll say something like, I only know about K-9 because people have talked about it. I'm like, oh, there was a dog? Okay. Like, I mean, so I have to be very, I feel guilty about that because I don't feel like I can legitimately call myself a movie.
I'm surprised you didn't say pen and paper role playing.
I want to play that. That's not for lack of wanting to.
Oh, man.
God.
I just
lost it. Well, you know, I would say comics. I really like comics, but I don't buy them. I don't read them. Lately, I've been reading more just because Molly and you keep lending me their. But, you know, even though the stuff they lend me is great and I will keep reading it, I probably will still never buy my own.
It's not a bad situation if you have friends that have shit to, like, give you the cream of the crop of.
Sure. Oh, and it's great, but I think if you're asking about, I will talk about comics like I know more about them than I do.
Yes.
You know, gotcha. And if somebody brings up a comic character, I'll be like, oh yeah, really interesting. Yeah. I won't say, I don't know who the fuck you're talking about. I'll go home and look them up later and go, oh, that's what we were talking about. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
It's improv. You're just improvising with the conversation.
Yeah. There's a slew of sci-fi shows that I've never seen that I like. Okay, I've seen like 3 episodes of Babylon 5.
Same here.
I've seen like 2 episodes of Stargate Atlantis or any of the Atlantis shows, and I fucking hate them. And I just like they have no appeal to me whatsoever. They seem like low budget sci-fi bullshit. And like Farscape, Lex. I hated Lex.
Oh my god,
so
I love
bad.
Lex.
It's like a show made by a 15-year-old boy for other 15-year-old boys.
Whatever, fuck you, it was amazing.
And well, that's why you like it, because you're the mind of a 15-year-old boy.
That is true.
And so, like, even more recently, like, Grimm, Supernatural, Once Upon a Time.
I like those that they weren't ripping off
like
labels.
Anything that's been on like sci-fi except for BSG, I think. Like, I just haven't seen any of those shows. And Molly and I watch a lot of television and they have no appeal to me. And we have a lot of friends that watch maybe they're really passionate about maybe B5. And my dad fucking loves Babylon 5. I gave him like the whole box set for a gift 1 year. It's just like, haven't seen much of it. I might enjoy it, but I don't know if I'm
the same way where Babylon 5, it's like I keep trying to start it and I keep hearing that you have to get past the first season, but it's just the acting is so poor and
it's
the effects
so
are so poor. I mean, the storyline could be great, but if it's done in that with those trappings, it's just like it's so hard to get into.
Well, and I didn't know that until today. I didn't know that it was written by JMS, Jason Michael Straczynski, who wrote Spider-Man for like, I don't know, 10 years or something for Marvel. It's like, well, he's a great writer. I know he is.
Okay, next question. Setting Care Bears Cloud Mail aside, what's the craziest or most irrational belief you've ever held, and how did you lose it?
Okay, when I was a kid, I genuinely believed that I believed in ghosts the way that you do, you know, and I genuinely was concerned about, I was very superstitious, so I thought that if I didn't hold my breath going past a graveyard, that I could get possessed, to the point where I held my breath so long once going past a very long graveyard that I passed out in the car, and my mom had to like pull over and like slap me awake, and was like, you can't, what is wrong with you? I'm like, ghosts. Like, it took a long time before I had to, like, I still sometimes, if I'm going past one, a little part of my brain is like, whatever, and it's like, no, that I don't really believe it, but it's just so ingrained.
You have a lot of superstitious habits.
They're little computer algorithms running.
Yeah.
I used to have more. Like I don't have cancer, knock on wood.
I'm better about it, though. I'm usually better about it. Yeah. Like, it used to be more compulsive.
It was fairly compulsive for you at one point.
I don't throw salt anymore.
Yeah, you don't throw salt anymore. But you don't believe that shit. It's like a habit.
Yeah.
You just keep answering the questions for Molly. What the fuck?
I know. He's my husband. I can think of that shit
easier for her than I can for me. For me, it's like, I don't know. When I was a kid, I tried to sell my soul to Satan, like, over and over and over to get what I wanted, and that never happened, so I stopped. Like,
so it was like anti-prayer.
Kind of. I wanted results. I didn't want, like, I don't know, I didn't want, like, goodwill and, like, world peace. Like, I don't know, I was 8. I wanted a lot of fucking Legos. I was willing to, a soul seemed like a worthless thing to have. Like, Legos have worth. I will gladly exchange my soul for Legos. That never happened, so.
Bummer.
This is the most vivid early memory I have. When I was about 4 years old, I remember waking up one morning and being keenly aware of my own existence for the first time. It was like there was my life before that moment that I couldn't tell you a single fucking thing that happened. And there's stuff that lots of stuff that I remember after that. I don't know at this point in my life if that ever really happened. I just have this memory. And for the longest time, the main reason that I clung to the idea of deism or believing that there was some sort of supernatural thing was the feeling that that was the moment that my soul entered my body. That was the moment that whatever consciousness that is beyond the physical being that we are entered my body and said, oh, by the way, there's this thing called life and you're part of it.
Interesting.
I now can look back at that and go, you know, it probably wasn't a one-time thing. It's probably how I remember it.
And 4 years old is about when most people start to have their first memories it's a normal age.
Yeah, but I think that I held on to that for a very long time. That was the last thing that I held on to for a long time in my journey from believing that there was some sort of supernatural thing to deciding that there just wasn't.
For me, and I know I said I wasn't going to answer these.
Yeah, what the fuck?
For me, it was when I was 19 at Hamlin. I was staying there over the summer, and I was, at the time, I was reading books about astral projection and stuff, and I actually had a sleep paralysis thing where, if you read some of Dawkins' books and stuff, he explains the concept of sleep paralysis where, you know, you have this, like, you feel like you're awake and you will view it through whatever religious lens, you know, some people view it as demons sitting on them, some people view it as, you know, alien abductions. But for me, I had that experience where I felt like I was floating above my body, and that is what had me, like, latch on to the supernatural for so much longer than I think I otherwise would have, was that sleep paralysis experience.
Yeah.
I had that happen once. It was just the most terrifying thing ever.
Yeah. Final question. Your favorite pizzeria in the cities and why? Mm. It doesn't have to be the best pizza, but your favorite overall experience. Be descriptive. What kind of pizza do you like? And please note any pizza biases up front, such as New York, deep dish, Chicago style.
Sure.
So as a partial answer, I feel, in general, cheese pizza is the best pizza because if you like pizza, you like cheese pizza. Anyone who likes pizza likes fucking cheese pizza because that's the base from which you build all pizzas.
Yep.
If you don't like cheese pizza, I don't know, go fuck yourself. Something. I don't know. Like it's just, so But I have my specific favorite pizza experience is I played D&D, or I used to more regularly play D&D in my friend Colin's basement with a bunch of friends. He is a manager of a Pizza Luce. He used to manage the downtown. Now he's the like general manager of the uptown. He's a good friend. And so he used to, like, they give their employees like credit for pizza, like pizza bucks. And so he would order us pizza for D&D nights fairly regularly, not all the time. And we could get anything that's not on the menu custom made. And so something we got fairly regularly was just like a regular Pizza Luce pizza, like that weedy crust of theirs, with a layer of Frank's hot sauce instead of pizza sauce. And then just smother the thing in Munster.
Ooh.
Cheese. And so it was kind of like a like skunky, like stinky cheese, like really good with the and it kind of ended up being like a buffalo wing pizza type thing, but just that.
Huh.
And like there's one or two guys that in the group that didn't like it, and everyone else loved it. So we wouldn't even get that all the time when we would order. But I think like that, like ordering from Luce, like off the menu, extra cool. Like that was our. That's probably it.
You know, the first thing I have to say is that I hate tomatoes. I don't eat tomatoes in anything. Pizza is the only thing in which I eat tomatoes. But my favorite pizza is predicated on it not being a chunky pizza sauce, because the last thing I want is little chunks of tomato on my pizza.
Sure.
So I always have trouble going to new pizza restaurants because I'm never sure how that sauce is going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
So that said, I also really like a good kind of greasy pizza.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love lots of cheese. So, you know, you're talking about cheese pizza.
Mm-hmm.
Like I love to be able to pick up the pizza and have the cheese stretch as I'm picking it up. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't do that, there's not enough cheese on it. So, much as I love Devani's and my family loves Devani's, my favorite local pizza chain is actually Carboni's, because they make this amazing greasy pizza. It's got just enough sauce on it that you can tell there's tomato sauce on it, but not enough sauce on it.
It's a low sauce pizza.
Yeah, it's a low sauce pizza.
I like a low sauce.
It's a thin crust, and I don't like my crust too thick.
Mm-hmm.
I usually have it with mushrooms because I'm a big mushroom fan.
Oh.
but plain cheese is fine as well. But I like a pretty simple pizza. I like that straight up cheese with maybe pepperoni or mushrooms, and that's enough.
In terms of like a favorite pizzeria, like a pizza place experience, I'm gonna go with Pizza Luce, just being in the restaurant. But if I'm, and I always will love Luce pizza, it's great. But for if I want like a regular pizza and I'm just gonna take it home, there's a place in Eden Prairie called Gina Maria's that has their thin crust is like I like cracker thin crust, but I also really don't like it when it's a doughy crust. So their regular crust is a thin dough crust, so it's not super crackery, which I love mostly. Like when I'm in New York, I get coal-fired pizza, which is the best. But then we just do cheese and we do banana peppers. So it's like lots of banana peppers and just, you know, it's a greasy cheese and it's really good. I don't like pizza being in the refrigerator, so I will leave it. We'll just put it in the oven, like the off oven, instead of putting it in the refrigerator, so that it's just room temperature when you eat it again. Because I don't
you
really
get double
think,
mushrooms on that.
I like double mushrooms. Yeah. I love mushrooms on pizza.
Yeah, they put a lot of sauce on. They have a really good sauce too.
I sometimes will just eat mushrooms. I just cook them in a pan and eat them out of a bowl. So I will.
Sure,
I will
that's
always.
Awesome.
I will always put mushrooms on stuff. But yeah, if I had to go, like if I can be anywhere I want for pizza, coal fired pizza. There's a place called John's Pizzeria in New York that we go to when we're there for Toy Fair, and that's the best. Unfortunately, it does not reheat. If you try to have it later, it's garbage. It's fucking garbage. I don't know what it loses. It's worse than trying to eat. Like, think of the worst frozen pizza. It's worse than that. Like, you don't even want to put it in your mouth.
By the way, anybody out there who says Domino's or Papa John's, I don't fucking want
to
know.
I used to work for Domino's, and I actually love Domino's pizza because I worked there, and I like it, and it's tasty. And I will say, by the way, that dude doesn't own Domino's anymore. He has nothing to do with it anymore. So stop saying you don't eat Domino's because of that fucking horrible anti-choice guy. It's not a valid excuse. Let's get Domino's.
I don't eat a Domino's because I think it's horrible.
That's fine. What is a valid excuse is the Papa John's guy's an asshole. And so
He is. That's true.
Well, this was great. Thank you so awesome, much. Man. And so we have a very special thing for you listeners. If you enjoyed Matt's five questions, which I'm sure you did because they were very great questions and much better than our stupid ones, you can write in. If you in the comments on this podcast episode's post your responses to Matt Savickle's five questions. And then we are going to take, out of all the people that answer, we're going to draw a name, and that person will win a copy of Atheist Voices of Minnesota that Matt has donated to us.
Featuring an essay by Tim Wick.
That's
right. Did I mention I'm in a book? Did I bring that up? Did I say that today?
Yes, he wrote a book. Sweet. And we will repost the questions in the liner notes there. So if you want the liner notes, in our album shout outs. So excellent. Well, thanks, Matt.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again.
I'm sure we'll have you on again.
What's the third time with the questions?
We'll figure that out.
Oh my gosh.
We have you on again.
I think
again.
That's the silver anniversary.
Do the questions incept themselves?
I think the third time we have to come up with a new set of five
questions. Trivial Pursuit. we get like a Bible Trivial Pursuit and we answer those questions.
Random phone calls to
people. Random phone calls. We can do like how to the millionaire with the lifeline. Yeah.
We'll phone a friend and ask them our five questions.
All right. Speakerphone.
So yes. Put them on the spot.
All right. Well, thank you very much. We've been Geeks Without God. Come see us at Skeptech this weekend, University of Minnesota. Details in the post. And thanks, everyone. You can find us on Facebook and all sorts of other stuff. Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Geeks Without God is proudly partnered with Fearless Comedy Productions.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Listen to past podcasts and catch us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. Follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod and like our Facebook page, Geeks Without God.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Longest episode ever.
That's all right.